This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have a profile of the ever-popular Yorkshire Terrier.
I think they are just the most delightful companion. They seem to be forever young. They never seem to get that old dog look.
We meet a big dog with a taste for fiction.
My dog's name is Dozer, and he's an English Mastiff, Bull Mastiff cross with a little black lab thrown in for colour.
And for Buddy, life is good at the moment.
All my organs are apparently functioning as they should. All my joints are moving freely. My nose is wet. My coat is shiny and my teeth are clean.
Before we get to all that, let's hear from Jenny.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime! Hello and welcome to Puppy Playtime. This time I have a brilliant website for you to explore. It's a Battersea Dogs and Cats home site, and you can find my favourite page of this site at www.dogshome.org/playtime/. This is a really fun section of the site with lots of games to play. I enjoyed playing pairs where each game is timed so you can see if you get better each time. In a flea circus game, you have to guide your chosen animal around the course getting food and drink before the fleas catch you. In Misfits, you can create a silly or a sensible creature as you like. And if you click on the piano feature, up comes a piano with a difference. The notes are dog barks of differing pitches. As well as the games, there are ideas for treats for your dog, including recipes and even a knitting pattern. This site offers you an opportunity to send some really cute e-cards. It would be great if you could check out this site and send me an e-card. Send your e-card to jenny@dogcastradio.com and I will reply to everyone I receive. Hope you enjoy this website as much as I do. And until next time, remember to have fun with your dog and make sure your dog has fun with you.
We know dogs help us in a variety of ways, but every now and then you come across a story that highlights that special relationship. We heard about a dog in the US that was helping children's confidence in their reading ability. Karen is his owner, and she tells us about this very special dog.
My dog's name is Dozer,
mm-hmm.
and he's an English Mastiff, Bull Mastiff cross with a little black lab thrown in for colour.
So he's a big dog.
He's 120 pounds, yes.
Yes, that's big. And tell us, what's the very special job he has with children?
Well, I belong to a non-profit group in our community. We help out families that are in crisis due to stress or other circumstances, or that have children that have special needs. And it's a program that I have used, and for me, this is a way to give back to the community by doing therapy work with some of our kids. We've had children in the program that have been blind, that have autism, or have other special needs.
Mm.
And this is a way that we can encourage them to come out of their shell and kind of explore the world around them.
So How would they interact with Dozer? What does he do? Is he very active, or does he sort of just let them sit and stroke and talk to him, or how would that go?
Dozer just kind of sits there, and the children are free to approach him. He's a big couch potato anyway, so he kind of lets the children make the initiative and the initial contact. And he slobbers all over them, loves on them. And if the kids, you know, want to pet him, talk about him, explore, you know, look in the ears, that's you know, all sensory input that a lot of these kids need.
And how did the reading come about? Can you explain to us about the reading aspect?
The reading came about, I was doing some research online and found that there were several libraries that were doing pet therapy work where the children could come in and read to the dog in the library.
Mm.
And I thought that was really neat. That was wonderful. Unfortunately, there isn't any avenue like that out here in our community, but I'm looking into that. Then I thought, what better way to help our kids, even those that don't have special needs, but maybe don't feel comfortable reading out loud to their classmates, they could read to the dog. My oldest son does that. When he comes home from school, he always has a book. He reads his book to me or to his dad, and then I ask him to go, please read to Dozer. And it really has helped him in his self-confidence with reading, getting to know words, and feeling comfortable about reading out loud.
Oh, that's lovely. Because I think that's one of the nice things about dogs. They, you know, obviously they never offer a criticism, and they're very accepting. That's the thing that comes across, and I think that's the quality that they're tapping into, isn't it? That they just sit there and look at you like you're very clever.
Yes, yes. No, even if you're wrong, you're always right.
Yes. So how long has Dozer been doing this for, then?
Just a very short time. We've just passed our CGC back in December.
What's that? Sorry.
Canine Good Citizen.
Oh, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We passed all of our testing for pet therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing this just a very short time, but it's something that I wanted to do to give back to the community upon which we live.
So if anyone has a dog sort of that has a basic good nature, what would you say they need to do if they would like to give back in a similar way?
I would say first and foremost training. See what is out there. See what needs need to be met. I seem to gravitate towards programs that have children. I think children are our best resource, and let's give them the best head start that we can in life, and give them that "I can do it" attitude that will carry them through. But if somebody's interested in, there are numerous therapy organizations out there that get in contact with one of them. See who's in your local area.
What sort of requirements do they have, the actual therapy organization? Now, obviously, this may well vary, but, I mean, do you have to have done obedience, even basic obedience, you know, certificates or anything, or are they looking more at the nature of the dog? Is it the temperament? What do they require?
They do require a good-natured, a good-tempered dog. A lot of the groups require a CGC title. A lot of groups also require that the dogs go through a practical testing. Can they sit and stay on command? How do they react around loud noises? How do they react around people that may walk funny? Medical equipment, loud noises. Are they fearful? Are they kind of blasé about it? And you can kind of narrow it down as to who would be a good therapy dog and who wouldn't.
So just as you were saying that, I was thinking, because we have a Labrador. And he, I mean, he has a lovely nature, he's very nice, but he's just way too exuberant and boisterous.
Then that probably, giving some time with the dog. I know with labs, as they get older, they're supposed to mellow out, some do, some don't. And it's pretty much, you know, some people like to be out there in the public, and some people don't like to be, same with dogs.
He will mellow, but, I mean, even sort of... when he initially meets someone, he's got to give them a really enthusiastic greeting. You know, that's they've got to be greeted properly. And then he'll lie down and be as good as gold, but he's got to make sure they're his friend first.
Yes, and I think Dozer and I have been going through dog obedience off and on for the last 2 years. I got Dozer through one of our local no-kill shelters when he was 9 months old.
Mm.
And he had no manners.
Mm.
He would not hesitate to jump on you and lick your face. And with a dog that weighed 100 pounds, that was not something that was acceptable.
No, no.
And I knew that he was only going to get bigger as he got older. Going through dog obedience is first and foremost.
Mm. And how did he take to that, being sort of not a tiny puppy?
He was just an absolute love right from the get-go. Smart. You can almost see the wheels turning in his little head. And when the light bulb goes on, when he gets something, I use positive reinforcement. Everything's uplifting and way to go, and we always end on a positive note with something that he knows. So it's always a positive experience. And this is the first time I've ever had a large breed dog.
Mm.
And he has just been remarkable. Every day there's something new that he just never ceases to amaze me.
The other thing is, with such a big dog, how do the children react to him? Because I imagine, you know, adults and children have quite different reactions to the, you know, dogs of that size. Like, how do they react to him?
Some children are a little fearful and hesitant. I usually put him in a down stay when it's time to work, and therefore he's not quite so intimidating if he were standing or sitting up. And as the children become more comfortable, they really don't even seem to notice his size.
That's wonderful. And does he have a preference for any kind of stories? Is there any favorites?
None that he has told me so far.
Thank you ever so much for taking the time to talk to us. And Dozer sounds lovely.
Oh, well, thank you for calling, Julie. I appreciate it. I'm really surprised that this has taken off as fast as it has. I've had, with the interviews with the local newspaper, that totally came as a surprise. I've had other people express an interest in wanting to work with the kids as well. So I'm really shocked that there is such a high interest. I figured this is just something that I would do myself. But it seems like it's going to take off, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what's really nice, that a dog that somebody else didn't want and he ended up in rescue is doing so much good.
Yes. We had lost our previous dog of 13 years, and for me, a house just isn't a home without a pet. And I had done some research on what type of breed I was looking at. I knew I wanted a large dog. Mastiff seemed to be the best suited for our family, and Mastiff Rescue, our local Mastiff Rescue did not have any dogs that they felt suitable for our family. And I found Dozer at our local no-kill shelter, and he has just been an absolute gem. It seems that he almost realizes that where he was and where he is now, and is very appreciative of what he has.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that before, that, you know, they're very grateful for the second chance with another pack.
Yes.
Well, give him a stroke from me.
I'll even give him a cookie for you.
Okay. Thanks ever so much, Karen.
Thank you so much, Julie.
Okay. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A lovely lady and a lovely dog, both doing a lot of good. And there are three links on the Dogcast site if you'd like to follow up anything that Karen was talking about there. Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. Life is good. I've just come home from the vet with a clean bill of health. All my organs are apparently functioning as they should. All my joints are moving freely. My nose is wet. My coat is shiny and my teeth are clean. She listened to my heart, and whatever it said to her, she approved. I'm a healthy chap in the prime of life. I'm not even too stout. Even the vet had to admit I'm in good shape. Of course, after all the praise, she ruins it by sticking a needle in your neck. And then this time, to add insult to injury, she even squirted some disgusting concoction at my nose. A good sneeze got rid of it, though, so not to worry. Even the needle doesn't really hurt, and I get lots of treats for being a good boy, so all in all, I don't mind going for my checkup and booster shots. I actually like going to the vet. First, there's whoever's behind the reception desk. I make a point of jumping up with my paws on the counter so they don't feel left out. It's always good if there's other dogs waiting too. I can pass the time of day with them, have a sniff at each other, maybe a quick play, find out what they're going to see the vet for. Cats aren't so good, obviously. We dogs take it on the chin, make the most of it, work the situation to our advantage, and get extra fuss and treats. Cats, on the other hand, won't shut up about it. Meow, I'm stuck in my basket. Yowl, I don't like the vet. Screech, I'd rather be out harassing innocent dogs. And so on. And on. And on. If you try and give them a friendly, encouraging sniff, odds are they'll try and scratch you on the nose. I don't understand it. Nothing to complain about going to the vet. I remember the first time I visited the surgery. I was a tiny scrap of a puppy, 8 weeks old. Everyone fussed over me, saying how cute I was. It was a bit embarrassing, but I can't deny I was cute. And what Labrador can turn down attention? I was taken on a tour of the place, because they all wanted to meet the cute puppy. When I met the vet, I was very excited, because she smelled of so many lovely, animal-y smells. She was very playful, wanting to pull my ears, open my mouth, all kinds of things. But being a Labrador, I like a good play. Afterwards, when she was giving my person the "don't overfeed him because Labradors run to fat" talk, which I didn't pay much attention to at the time, not realising the sad shadow it would cast over my life. Anyway, during that talk, I fell asleep in her arms. Oh yes, I like going to the vets. At least, I do when I'm feeling okay. When I'm feeling a bit rough, it can be a different story. I've been lucky so far, apart from one time when I went a bit mad and overdid it, running in the park and jarred my elbow. The main problem I've had is my ears. There I'll be, lying on my bed, feeling pretty grotty. The next thing I know, it's lead on and off to the vets. I'm a social dog, but when you're under the weather, you don't want to go out visiting, do you? And wouldn't you know it, whenever my ears are hurting, that's just when the vet wants to play with her cold metal ear toy, which he tries to jab in my ear. When you're a well-bred, nicely brought-up chap, giving the vet a warning nip just isn't an option. So I've had to develop other strategies. I've tried showing the vet that I know she's above me in the pack, and that she doesn't need to play these rough games to establish her dominance, by sliding onto the floor and lying on my back to show my surrender. The vet obviously doesn't speak dog very well, because she never backs off. She just makes the most of the fact that I'm lying on my back and keeps jabbing the metal thing in my already hurting ears. The only course open to me is Plan B. This involves waggling my head around so wildly my ears become a flapping blur and she can't see where to jab at all, while accompanying this with kicking out with my legs equally wildly in the hope of keeping her far enough away that she can't reach me. These vets are cunning though, and she too has other strategies. After a few tries, she calls for the nurse. Nurses are people who work with vets, and their job is to wrestle with dogs who won't let the vet jab metal things in their ears, or any other part of their anatomy actually. So the nurse comes out, and although he isn't very big, he's obviously been taught some clever wrestling holds, because within seconds he has me pinned to the floor, and then the ear jabbing begins in earnest. This is usually followed up with horrible tablets to be swallowed at home, and then further visits to the vets for more wrestling with the nurse. Thinking about it, I could almost join in with the sad but annoying yowling of the cats in their baskets. But then we dogs are forgiving creatures, and by the next time I visit the vet, all is forgotten, and I give her my usual enthusiastic greeting. Maybe cats aren't nasty. Maybe they just have good memories. In which case, I pity the vets that have to deal with elephants. Oh well, till next time.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. One of the most popular terriers is the Yorkshire Terrier. Marita Parker from Crystal Waters Kennel in Canada is an established, successful breeder. We started off talking about the realities of life with this breed.
Hello, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Good, good. How are your dogs?
Oh, they're wonderful, as always.
Okay, so what's it like to live with a Yorkshire Terrier?
Having now had them for over 10 years, I know I will sound prejudiced, but I think they are just the most delightful companion.
Mm.
They seem to be forever young. They never seem to get that old dog look. And they're just very loving, very companionable, very portable because of their size.
Mm. And are they good family dogs?
They really are, Julie. Now, having said that, I want to qualify it. You know, breed standard says that the Yorkshire Terrier should be anywhere between 3 and 7 pounds. So we're very careful where we put, say, the tiny ones. The ones anywhere from 5 to 7 pounds are delightful for families.
Mm.
They love walking. They love hanging out. You know, we've quite successfully placed a number in good family situations. Now, a 3-pounder, you know, that's more something that needs to be in a home where there are adults only.
Mm.
Only because of size, not because of disposition or anything. Strictly because of size.
Mm, mm. It's for the dog's safety himself, isn't it?
Exactly, because, you know, we had 5 children of our own. We have 10 grandchildren, so we're not prejudiced against children. We simply say, what is the best dog size-wise for this particular environment?
Mm, mm. It's common sense, isn't it?
It really is. Mm. It really is. And you know, people are really good once you explain the reasons behind sort of what your policy is within your own kennel.
Mm, mm. And do they sort of, are they a one-person dog, or do they bond with the whole family? What are they like there?
You know, every dog has its own personality. And what I find is that there is the odd one that, say, will bond to so-and-so because so-and-so might be the main caregiver and the one that's home most of the time.
Mm.
Do they not want to associate with the rest of the family? I don't find that at all.
Mm.
I guess that's one reason why they make such a good family pet, because I don't find that they will... that the majority of them would say choose one to the exclusion of everyone else.
Mm.
However, having said that, everybody has their own personality.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What about training? How easy are they to train?
You know, there is differing opinions on that, Julie. I've heard both sides, so I'm going to tell you from our perspective.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of studies out about brain development in children and study animals. And what we have found, we sort of have what we call an early childhood development program, where the puppies need to be handled every day from birth. And now, research says that they will have a larger brain development. They will withstand stress much better. They just have a higher intelligence level. Now, the other thing is that with ours, we provide access to, we call it a potty box. What it is, it's a litter box with some special litter in it. And everybody tells us that our puppies are incredibly easy to train. And I wish more breeders would glom onto this litter box thing, because our puppies don't just sort of squat and pee.
Mm.
They're looking for something to go into or out. So, weigh that, though, with consistency. The trainer has to be consistent in offering that litter box or that time to go out or whatever. But in general, people have come back to us and said our puppies are very easy to train. I'll give you this example. We had a puppy that went out just the other day. And again, I, you know, taught the people how to set the litter box, where to set it, you know, the size of confinement while they're little. And they called me back and said they're most impressed because that puppy, from the day it got there, looks for its litter box.
Excellent.
Now, Julie, having said that, I don't want anyone to misunderstand and think that, oh, okay, I'll put a litter box down and let the puppy have run of the whole house.
Mm.
No. You know, it's like a child, out of sight, out of mind. So with all that, the initial training has to be in more of a restricted area. Like, I guess I use this example. If you spend most of your time in your kitchen, somehow block the kitchen off with the litter box there so the puppy can see it all the time. And as it gets older, then give it access to more of the home, but it will then remember where that litter box was.
Mm.
Mm. Now, that still doesn't mean that you can't train them to go outside. They will train very nicely to go outside, but the key issue is that they're not looking to necessarily squat and do their business on your floor. They're looking for something else.
Mm.
I have people that have said obedience training is wonderful with Yorkies. For intelligence, they're actually quite high up.
Mm. Mm. Do you think it's to the training with the Yorkies is... Sometimes I think that there's sort of a small dog syndrome in that people will tolerate behaviour from a small dog that they wouldn't from a larger dog. One, because it wouldn't be practical. But two, you know, if he is being a problem or whatever, you can scoop him up and deal with it that way. So the dog isn't taught, no, this is the behaviour I expect.
Yes, but you know what? I really feel that the breeder has a huge responsibility in this part. The breeder needs to educate that caregiver.
Mm.
To those points, if you, barking for example, I don't tolerate yapping.
Mm.
But you know, when a puppy is 6 months old, you hear that little yap yap, it's so cute.
Mm.
And I tell people, but you know what, at two it's not so cute. So you have to decide what behavior you want and then set your rules as to how you're going to obtain that behavior.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's marvellous guidance to give them right from the, you know, the start.
Mm, they, you have to have it. That's all part of being a responsible breeder.
Yeah. What about shedding and grooming?
The Yorkshire Terrier does not shed.
Mm-hmm.
They have hair like we do,
mm-hmm.
and it grows. So I'm not saying that you never find a piece of hair, but when you brush your hair, you always find some in your brush also.
Mm.
And that's the wonderful thing about this breed. They don't shed. And, Julie, you know the increase in allergies.
Mm.
And our son, who's grown and gone now and, you know, has a Yorkie of his own, it was a prime example. He just was allergic to everything. And yet he was able to have two Yorkies sleep in the bed with him.
Mm.
So that lack of shedding is a great benefit. For grooming, if you're going to show a Yorkie, you have a lot of grooming because that dog needs to be brushed regularly to keep the knots out.
Mm.
I encourage pet people to go to a groomer
Well, first of all, find a picture that they like, and we call it a puppy cut.
Mm.
We keep the bodies shaved right down, and then a little, you know, a little longer on the head and the legs. Very easy.
Mm.
I would say, I usually tell people that if they gave the puppy, or the groomer did a puppy cut, did a good puppy cut, probably your maximum grooming at a groomer's would be 2 to 3 times a year to maintain a decent puppy cut.
Mm. Mm. Oh, that's not bad, is it?
No, it really isn't. But, you know, it's everybody's personal preference.
Mm. Is there anything else that we need to bear in mind, you know, with it being a small dog? I mean, for example, one of the things I'm thinking of is, you know, the collapsing trachea problem.
Yeah, there are a couple of things within the breed, and I'm not convinced that from the research that's coming out that it's specifically in the breed. Collapsed trachea is, you know, quite dominant in some breeds, not just the Yorkshire Terrier.
Mm, mm.
I really think that there's a lot of things that the person themselves can do. I do not recommend a collar.
Mm.
When a puppy is training, I always tell people use a harness.
Mm.
And but collapsed trachea is in some lines, but you know what? Good breeders will work to get that, whatever it is that is popping out in their line. But let me give you this example, heart attacks.
Mm.
And again, that's not specific to small dogs.
Mm.
If you see that you are developing something particular in your line, then it's your responsibility to get that out of your line. And it's not difficult.
Mm.
You just have to be very careful about your breeding program.
Mm. Mm. You just need people who are scrupulous about it, don't you?
You do, and you know, you have to make some hard calls.
Mm.
And you have to say, where am I going with this? Am I just wanting to produce puppies?
Mm.
Well, then it really won't matter, will it, Julie?
No.
You know, or am I wanting, like, we get a lot of people, we've had people come back for a second and a third puppy from us.
Mm.
Because their puppies have grown up to be healthy adults.
Yeah.
And if you're in it for the long haul, you are going to want to produce not only beautiful dogs, but incredibly healthy ones too. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is to have strong genetic lines. Now, having said that, you know, Julie, you can have something pop up in one of your children or one of your siblings that there has been no trace of it in a family.
Mm.
So there is always that. They're just, and my vet says the same thing. I think one thing in small breeds that people have to be aware of is, and you can't get away from it, is a luxating patella. That's a loose knee joint.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I could go into a long explanation, you know, into that there's one that's genetic, there's one that's not genetic. And as a breeder, you simply are not going to get away from the non-genetic luxating patella.
Mm.
Because you have a small dog on a small joint. But again, the caregiver has a responsibility. Small dogs should never be taught to dance on their back legs.
Mm.
We don't encourage our dogs to jump up on our furniture. You know, anything that puts additional stress on legs. These dogs are not dogs that you take jogging with you if you want a dog to go jog, unless you're packing it.
Mm.
If you want a dog to jog, do your research and find a breed that's whole body can withstand that jolting.
Mm.
But any good breeder, you know, again, needs to educate that potential caregiver.
Yeah.
And say, look, these are some of the things within the breed. A, you have to be aware of them before you choose the breed, and B, if you're going to make this your long-time companion, then these are some of the steps that you have to take to reduce the risk of that happening within that particular puppy. And then again, you have to be a responsible breeder. If something comes up 4 years down the road, you have to be there and you have to give some good advice.
Yeah. If only all breeders were as responsible.
Well, you know, I have found within our years of breeding a huge change, Julie, in people's education level.
Mm.
It used to be way back that I really had to take everybody, let's say 90% of the people, and tell them this. You know, you have to choose your breeder first. If you're choosing by price alone, then, you know, you've got a crapshoot.
Mm.
You need to choose your breeder and make sure that you choose a reputable breeder. Within the last few years, I've noticed a huge shift in people saying to me, I want to choose a reputable breeder.
Mm.
Fewer people saying this. How much are your dogs?
Mm. Mm. Good.
And to be honest, yeah. In honesty, Julie, I'm not trying to be harsh, but I don't want to deal with people that are simply choosing on price.
No.
Because they have missed the whole point of responsible breeder versus puppy mill backyard breeder.
Mm.
So again, the onus is on the breeder. You have to take the time to teach everybody that you talk to, you know, what it is they need to be looking for.
Mm. Is there anything else that you would want to add?
I think the only thing that I would want to add, Julie, is that for people to take time to research the breed, that research the breed first to see whether it fits with their family, because the Yorkshire Terrier has a very long lifespan. 15 to 17 years is not uncommon.
Mm.
That's a long, long time to commit to one breed and make sure that that's what you want before you even phone a breeder.
Definitely, yeah. Because, I mean, any dog is a commitment, but that is a long commitment, isn't it?
That is a very long commitment. So, your children, if you get the dog when your children are young, your children will be all possibly grown up and gone, and you've still got this dog. So, you know, make sure that that's exactly what you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And then be prepared to take the time to find a good breeder and to pay the going price. Because, may I give you one example?
Mm.
I spoke to a family bought a dog from me. Oh, this has got to be 6-7 years ago, and their mother didn't want to pay the elderly mother didn't want to pay the price.
Mm.
So she bought a Yorkie out of the newspaper for $600. The family came back later and told me this, and after $600 more in vet bills, the puppy was dead.
Oh.
And the person that they bought it from would do nothing about it.
Mm.
Now here's $1,200 spent, major heartache, and still no dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that's just classic example. And people are not wanting to buy anymore from pet stores because they are saying, we don't want to support the puppy mill industry.
Mm,
and that's very important.
Mm.
Very important.
Mm.
You know, there aren't a lot of good breeders around. You've got to do your homework.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a message that we're trying to put out. You know, if you buy cheaply or from someone who isn't responsible, then you're setting yourself up for spending a lot of money and, as you say, heartache.
Yes. And I get so many calls, and I think I'm becoming a little maybe harder over time, Julie. I used to take a lot of time with these people, and I guess now I'm sort of saying, look, you bought a cheap dog, now it's your responsibility to go back to that breeder.
Mm.
And make that breeder fess up, you know, rather than, and again, you know, maybe, I don't know, Julie, maybe it's my age, you know, that I'm just not, I do want to help them, but you would then live out the results of your choices, which we all do, don't we?
Yeah, but it is just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is, it's really sad, and you know what? All for an extra few $100s.
Mm,
because that is usually the only difference there is. You know, and that's a very painful lesson.
Yeah. But I think that's what it comes down to with the breeder, isn't it? What is the breeder in it for? The dogs?
Exactly.
Or the money?
Exactly. I absolutely agree.
And that's why I say if a breeder is in it for the short term only, pumping out puppies, then the key will be get me my money, get out of my face. You know, somebody that's in it for the long haul that says, you know, I want to not only better the breed, I want to make sure that my puppies are not only beautiful, which is very important because we do a lot of showing, but I want to make sure that my puppies over the long haul are as healthy as we can possibly, from our end of it, produce. But it's very much, a partnership between the caregiver and the breeder. And the other thing I might want to add to that is you have to buy a registered dog. Otherwise, you don't know if this dog is inbred or what. And that breeder has to give you a written health guarantee. That's just a must. If there's no written health guarantee, you know, you're just begging for trouble. But we're very proud of our dogs. Last, in 2005, we finished eight. We finished eight champions. So, yeah, our dogs are very well appreciated in the ring.
Oh, excellent. Okay, right. Well, thank you ever so much for your time. And that
you're
was...
welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye, Marisa. Bye-bye.
There was lots of good advice there, which is relevant to buying a puppy of any breed. There's a link to Marita's website on the Dogcast site. Jan Fennell is a world-famous dog listener who created her own unique technique for communicating with dogs. Well, now she's created International Day of the Dog to celebrate Man's Best Friend. Sunday, the 30th of April, is the first one and is a call for the end to bullying. Suggested events might be a sponsored walk, to meet up with a bunch of other dogs and their people, or, if you don't have your own dog, you could volunteer at a local shelter or rescue centre. If you do arrange anything for the International Day of the Dog, there is a request that you take photos and send them into the site for the rest of us to enjoy. There's a link on the Dogcast site to Jan Fennell's site where you can find further details. If you're into dogs and the internet, then you might well be interested in mydogblog.com, a new website which allows dog lovers to create free dog blogs and interact with each other online. Most dog owners know how easy it is to fall into conversation with other dog lovers, and now you have the chance to do that online all around the world. The free blogs created at mydogblog.com come with a host of useful practical features. Users can choose their own blog address and choose from over 24 design templates. All templates are customizable. Users can also publish site feeds via RSS and create mailing lists to notify others when a new entry goes online. MyDogBlog.com also serves as an online community where users can build a network of friends who share their interests in dogs. Users can add friends who have special access to friends-only posts. The blogs support photo albums so that users can share dog pictures with friends and family. MyDogBlog.com already hosts a total of 134 dog blogs, many of which publish entries on a daily basis. So, if you'd like to tell others about your dog and hear about theirs, check this site out. There's a link on the Dogcast site. Well, that's it for this time. Till next time, look after yourself and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. we can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Why did the chihuahua bite the woman on the ankle? Because he couldn't reach any higher.